Good evening, this is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and welcome to tonight's edition of Tuesday Topics. I'd like to thank Marlena and Rachel and others, perhaps, for recording tonight's presentation. And I'd like to thank the ACB Radio Mainstream team, and lately it's been Mr. Bauer, for editing Tuesday Topics into the wonderful show they make it turn out to be. That's not fair, it may not be a wonderful show, but it's as good as it can possibly be made. And obviously we'd like to thank George Fies and Talking Communities for making this software available that allows Tuesday Topics and other now ACB Mainstream radio shows, including a new show on books that will premiere very soon on Wednesday evenings, to be recorded in the politics room. So thank you to George and Talking Communities. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a topic that's actually very timely. By the time this is broadcast, we will have just completed probably the world championships in this sport, and the sport is goalball. And we actually have two goalball players with us who will help us to understand the game. From Australia, a member of the Australian team who is coming to the United States to play in the world championships, David Truong, and Mr. Doug Powell from the Virginia area, who is also a goalball player. So I'm going to spend the first little while talking with these two gentlemen about what goalball is and how it works and what one does. And let me start with David. And David, perhaps you could give us a description of what the goalball field is like, how many players there are in each team, how you score points, and that sort of thing. And then we'll invite Doug to talk about some of the finer points of the game in a few minutes.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks for Tuesday Topic for giving me the opportunity to come and talk about this great game, goalball. Well, goalball basically is a game that's played indoors. It's played usually in a gymnasium on a volleyball court, and the court is 18 metres long by 9 metres wide. And at each end of the court, you have a set of goals, which is the width of the court, so the goals are 9 metres wide by about a metre and a half in height. The goals have a goal post and has a net and has a crossbar. In front of each goal are your opposing teams, and they are in what we call a team area, which is marked on the sides by string overlaid by tape, so the players can feel where the court is and when they're off the court, etc. Now, the team area is the width of the court, so 9 metres wide by 3 metres long. So from the goal line, 3 metres walking towards the other end, that'll be 3 metres. In each team area, you have three players, which make up a team. So three players can be on the court at any one time. They're all blindfolded. The team can actually have six players in a team, but three can only be on the court, as I said. The aim of the game, basically, is to throw a ball which weighs around about a kilo and a half or 1.25 kilos. I don't know the exact weight, but it's around about that much. The ball's about 70 centimetres in diameter. The ball's got bells in it. You're throwing the ball from your end, and try and get it past the opposition down the other end of the court. They only allowed to defend the ball within that 9 by 3 team area that I spoke about earlier. Once you get a ball past the opposition, that is a goal, and that's a scoring, so 1 point for each goal. The basic game goes for 2 10-minute halves with timeouts, and once you defend the ball, you only have 10 seconds to get rid of the ball, so you can't just defend the ball and grab onto the ball forever. Some of the other major rules are that a player can only throw the ball for 2 throws in a row. They can't have 3 throws. The ball's got to land within 6 metres in front of the goal, so you can't throw a full toss, so the ball's got to be thrown along the ground, basically. And as I mentioned before, everyone's under blindfold.
Doug, would you like to add a little bit to what David said to bring out some of the finer points?
Sure, Paul. Thanks. First of all, to Americanize it a little bit, it's like about 30 feet wide by 60 feet long. So three people are trying to defend a 30 feet width, and therefore they sort of lie down to make a wall to block the ball that's coming from the other team. It comes pretty fast, and you have to pick it up and roll it back and try and catch them off guard, or try and roll it over them or something like that. Oh, also the ball, to Americanize that, the ball is about the size of a basketball, but it's not inflated like a basketball. It has holes in it and has bells in it so that they actually jingle as the ball is moved around or rolled. The thing that's really exciting about it is that it's one of the few sports that blind people play where there's teamwork involved. and the three people work very closely together. Elite teams really know their way around the court very well. Their orientation is you know, phenomenal, and so they can move around between each other and try and catch the other team off guard by where the ball is coming from and you know, by whom. I have RP, so I was fully sighted as a kid, and it's really the one sport that I found that's comparable to the kind of team sports that I played when I was playing sighted sports.
David, without perhaps giving away Australia's approach to goal ball, talk a little bit about some of the strategies that goal ball teams apply in order to try to get the ball past the other guys.
yes, I really can't give too much away, I suppose, but just before I do that, just to add to what Doug was saying with goal ball, it's one of the few sports, it might be the only sport in the Paralympics, that is designed with the vision-impaired person in mind. You have other sports like athletics, cricket, swimming, athletics, swimming, etc. They're all being modified so vision-impaired people can get involved. But goalball is a game especially designed for us, so that's another unique thing about the game. As far as strategies are concerned, you've got a teams have very good coaching staff, and the coaching staff will probably look at videos of the other teams and will let the players know where a team's weak spot is. So basically, when you're on the court, you have a certain plan on where you're going to throw the ball. For example, our team might throw the ball from the opposition's left-hand side of the court, spin the ball across the court to their right, and get the centre player, which is the main defender, which is a person usually 3 metres from the goal,3 metres away from the goal line, and that person is the centre player who usually dives left and right to defend the ball. The other guys are usually back on the goalpost corners. But basically, you'll be getting the centre person to dive left and right, and then suddenly you'll bang a ball down a particular wing where once he's confused. So basically, that's one of the strategies. Another strategy might be to hit a particular spot a lot of times, so that the opposition get used to you throwing at a particular spot. Then you obviously would quickly switch your throw to another spot when they're not expecting it. There might be a particular player who you don't want to play in a particular game, so you could, I know that we've thrown games in the past because we know we're going to make the finals, where you particular target a player and really just throw your hardest at him. Even if he defends, it doesn't really matter, as long as you just get him tired, and then when it comes to the final, he's a little bit tired and won't be as good as he normally would be. So that's one of the strategies. As far as defensive concern, the centre player for us is the gateway for our defence. I mean, he's the one that lets our team know exactly what the opposition is doing with the ball, where they are likely to throw the ball from. He verbalises that to his teammates, and then we form our defensive patterns from that. So I'm not going to really tell you what they are, but that's basically the way we do it.
Now, either of you can answer this, whoever kind of gets the control button hit first. As I'm visualizing a goal ball court, you have an area which is about 18 meters long or 60 feet long, and each of the teams take up 3 meters at each end, which means there's a pretty fair chunk of change in the center where the teams actually aren't. That's kind of open field where the ball has an opportunity to roll, and as I'm figuring it, that's actually 12 meters. And also, as I'm picturing it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, at each end from the goal, there is a V of players. So there is typically a player on the left-hand side back a distance, and a player on the right-hand side back a distance, with the center player essentially at the forward end of the 3-meter area. So if one of you could indicate whether I'm visualizing this correctly, that would be cool.
Visualizing it very correctly. But the formation of the actual teams can change. I mean, the usual way that a team sets itself up is exactly the way you probably described, with one player 3 metres from the goal line, right on what we call the front line, and he's usually a centre player. He's usually what we call a centre player, diving left to right. And then you have a player on each goalpost corner, maybe a forward from the goal line a little bit. But some teams play 3 players right up the front line, where you 3 metres away from the goal. Some teams play 3 players right on the right on their goal line. So, and then some teams have a player halfway between the front line and the goal line on the right hand side. The centre player is kind of a little bit back from the front line, and you have the left hand side player might be right back, on the right on the front line. So it's up to really the way the coaches, instruct their teams to how the formations are created.
Doug, any thoughts?
Yeah, first of all, for novice players, it's really great to set up that the way that you suggested, because that way you don't clunk heads very readily, and that's always a nice thing. The other thing about the area in between, you can step over the team line when you're rolling the ball, as long as the ball still hits the floor within 3 meters of the front of the team area. So there's a 3 meter team area, there's a 3 meter area where the ball has to hit the ground in front of that team area, and then another 3 meters before you hit the center line. So, and if you've blocked the ball on defense, and the ball starts rolling back toward that other side from where it came, you can step over that line to pick up the ball. And again, as long as you're behind that 3 meter line, the high ball line they call it, you can let it go again, or you can pass it back to a teammate who is behind the line, and then they can roll it. So there is a usage for that space in between.
Add to what Doug said as well, that the centre player, or any of the players within the team area, can only defend the ball in that 9x3 area, or whatever your measurements are. But if a player defends the ball with his whole body in front of that 3 metre line, then the team gets penalised. I'll just talk a little bit about penalties. If you say, for example, a team member throws the ball 3 times in a row, they get penalised. If they throw the ball over that 3 metre line in front of the team area, like Doug has suggested, they get penalised. And there are various penalties. Now, what actually happens when your team gets penalised is the player who has infringed actually has to defend the whole of the team area by himself. So the other two players go off, and he has to defend that area by himself for one throw.
Ooh, that's nasty. And that's the only kind of penalty. There's nothing like a free throw into an empty net or anything like that. It's just that the other two players go off the court, and the guy has to do it alone. So typically, then, you're going to play 2 10-minute halves. Talk to me a little bit, one of you, about substitutions. Is there a requirement that particular players must play a certain proportion of the time? Is there free substitution? And how many timeouts typically are allowed per half?
Okay, well, I'll speak it up because I have to remember it for the upcoming championships, of course. But a team is allowed to only have 3 substitutions in a game. But if you substitute someone on at half time, that doesn't count. But in the actual game itself, the team's only allowed to have 3 substitutes. And also, a team is only allowed to have 3 timeouts as well. Obviously, when it's half time, the coaches can talk to the team, etc. But that's basically how it works.
So 3 timeouts and 3 substitutes. Now, I know this is going to come as a shock to some people, but goalball is actually a pretty rough sport, and injuries often happen. Let's assume that a team has already made its 3 substitutions, and there are, let's say, 4 minutes to go in the second half of the game, and one of the 3 players is actually injured. What's the situation then? Does that team simply play a man short?
Well, it's been my experience that that would be considered a medical substitution, and that doesn't count. You can then substitute somebody else on.
Excellent, thanks. Typically, in international competition, let me ask, this I guess is a question for David more than it is for Doug, who I guess hasn't so far played internationally. And by the way, people should check out the upcoming championships, because there will be daily reports online, and there will also be commentary on some of the matches that is a broadcast of some of the matches via the internet, so that people back home will actually be able to hear those, so you can get into goalball. And David, I don't know if you remember the website for that broadcast. If you do, please give it. I'm not sure I do. I have a way that people can find out, but I meant to look it up and didn't get a chance. But so, are there international styles that particular styles that different countries have, is my first question. My second question is, what is a typical score like? I mean, basketball, there are thousands and thousands of points scored, and in soccer, there are virtually none. Where does goal ball tend to fit into that constellation?
Well, just to answer regarding where you can hear about the broadcasting of goal ball, it's www.sports.pressakey.net. So www.sports.pressakey.net. And it's run by a bloke called Bill Teal, and he'll give you more information regarding on how you can access the actual live coverage on Talking Communities, apparently. So yeah, go and check that one out. To answer your first question, I suppose I touched on it a little bit before when I was trying to explain the defensive strategies. Most of the teams have their different styles, but it's mainly in the way they set up their defence. Throwing, you know, some teams might have certain strategies on where they're going to throw the ball, but there are different throwing styles, and there's too many of them to really go through, but some throw the ball like a discus, some throw the ball just like underarm, some throw the ball sidearm, some throw the ball with other interesting actions. So there's certainly, you can recognise a team by that, I suppose, but it's really, you recognise a team by the way they actually set up their defence and how they defend the ball. Like, for example, I spoke about one team can defend the ball with three players right on the front line, so 3 metres away from the goal line. Now, that's a pretty risky way to defend the ball, but if they're so in tune with each other, they know exactly where they are on the court and what space they have to cover, it's a very, very good way of defending a ball as well. Other teams, as I said, might defend with one guy at the back, right on the goal line, right on the centre back, and you have the other two guys right on the front line, one on each front corner of the court, so to speak, of the team area, I should say. So right on the front corner of the team area, diving in towards the centre of the front line, if you can imagine what I'm saying. So, yeah, there's other various defensive styles as well.
Doug, do you want to add to that?
I don't have any additions to that. I, as you said, I haven't had international play, but I have been to the World Championships when they were up in Quebec. And one of the things that I wanted to tell your audience about is the ambiance of watching a game. And it's really quite exciting. It's the one sport where the audience is, it's kind of like tennis, actually, only quieter than tennis is these days, because everyone is absolutely quiet while play is in play. And then when something happens, you know, everybody goes nuts. So it's quite explosive at times, and other times, you know, you can hear a ball roll.
David, my second question was, what is a typical score in a goal ball game?
A typical score is probably similar to soccer. Probably a really good game, like a finals. You might get a scoreline of something like 3-2, or 2-1, or maybe 4-3. So, yeah, I reckon it's equivalent to, I don't know what you guys call it. We call it soccer, or you might even call it football these days. It changes the name every 2 years, it seems. But, I'd say a typical scoreline in a really good tight game would be something like 2-1. Or 3-2, something like that.
And of course, if you think about how huge the goal is at either end, that speaks volumes for the effectiveness of folks. And maybe you can answer one question that will kind of wind this segment up. I'm thinking that probably in each 10-minute half, there would be something like 35 to 40, or maybe 45 to 50 throws. If you can enumerate that way, how many throws would you expect to see in a half?
Well, that's pretty difficult, but all I can say to you that in a minute, we would be unhappy if we didn't get at least 15 throws away in a minute. So I suppose, you'd be looking, say about 100 throws and a half, I suppose you could get away.
And unless there are timeouts, play is continuous. So as soon as the ball gets to the other end, it's going to be thrown back. And no one's allowed to hold it for more than 30 seconds. So it sounds like it's actually a pretty fast sport.
No one's allowed to hold the ball more than for 10 seconds, not 30, 10 seconds. So you've got to get rid of the ball within 10 seconds. Usually a team usually takes about 5 or 6 seconds to get rid of the ball is an average.
Wow. I think we've got a pretty good idea, or I do, of some of the basics of goal ball. David, let me ask you one other question. How many teams, if you know, are taking part in the World Championships? And how does it work? Is it kind of like the World Cup where people play a round robin first and then eliminate teams and then get down to the round of 16 or whatever it is and then gradually get down that way? Or are there, I don't know, you tell us.
Okay, right. There are 16 teams in the men's competition in two pools of eight. We play a round robin series, and then we have quarterfinals, semifinals, and then obviously the final. In the women's, there's 17, or I think there's 13 teams actually. 13 teams in the women's, and they've got two pools as well, and they go through the same process. They play quarterfinals, semifinals, and actually there mightn't be any quarterfinals. There might be just semifinals and finals. But basically, we play round robin and then have a final series to determine obviously the finalists to play in the grand final.
And who was the last champion, please, sir?
I think it was Sweden, actually. I could be wrong there, but I believe they're the defending champions. The European teams are usually very good at goal ball. They have an excellent record. I think the USA used to be pretty good for a while. They still may be. We'll see. We've got a couple of practice matches against them before the actual tournament starts, so that'll be interesting. But usually the European countries usually dominate goal ball. But obviously we're looking to change that. You know, there are other countries such as Japan and Iran from Asia, and you know, there are some other countries around that are looking to change the European domination, so let's hope that happens.
My recollection is that the championships are in Indianapolis, Indiana, is that right?
Well, I don't know, there might be something there, but we're going to Spartanburg in South Carolina, and the championships start next Tuesday. Head on down there, and if you can, if you live near there, and you'll see some good hot gobble action.
Boy, it's a good thing I wasn't too far off, isn't it? Spartanburg, South Carolina, that's actually a lot closer to me than Indianapolis, Indiana is. I think that about brings me to the end of the kind of introductory segment on goalball. I'd like to thank both of you very much for being here, and let me open it to see if people have some questions for you.
Hi, good afternoon there, or good morning there, David, wherever you are in Australia. Joe from Boston here. A comment, and then a couple quickie questions. I'll get them all out at once. I won't have to keep coming back because I got to go in a while. It's a very interesting game. I've never heard of this game. You mentioned that this sports is going to be more people, or I think you said, are arranging these games so that the visually impaired can play. Is there money in this for the winners? And what is your take? Are they going to arrange more of these type of games or sports so that the blind people can play and so that you guys can actually play in the real athletic champion leagues, not the, you know, the blind thing, like, you know, how you hear Jim McKay and all the others on TV? And I think something like this should be in, and I think that blind people should be able to participate in these type of games so that they would be on all the televisions and stuff, and so blind people can participate just about in any sports. I'd like your take on that, because this is quite interesting.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Joe, and it's about 7 minutes to 12 midday here, but as far as winners getting any money is concerned, I wish that was the case, because for us, I know it's going to cost us $6,000 Australian to go over the World Championships, and basically, I think the only thing you get for winning is, you know, basically the joy of being the world champions, I suppose. So as far as goalball going mainstream, I think it's always hard for sports that don't have a high profile to get into the mainstream media when you consider all the other sports that are available, such as, I suppose, baseball, soccer, cricket, etc. Goalball's being played at the moment at the World Championship level, as you know, and also at the Paralympics. Basically, the World Championships is a qualifying tournament also for the Paralympics. So for us, for example, we have to finish within the top six to qualify for the Paralympics automatically, and then if we don't, we've got another qualifying tournament next year in Brazil. But yeah, I understand where where you're coming from. It'd be nice if we could get onto the mainstream and be part of the mainstream sport as such, and you know, get money, etc. But unfortunately, that's not a reality at the moment.
Quick question for you, David or Doug, either one. Wondering what you guys feel about kids playing goalball. You know, whether there are any modifications there. Is it safe for kids, say, age, say, 6 years and up?
Was that Joe who's still talking? Because if it is, there is a Perkins, the blind school has a team that usually plays in the blind school sports league. Also, the Carroll Center, I think, is a good place in that area that has a goalball program. The answer is, I think it's a great idea to have young kids starting to play the game. I don't think there's any modifications. Actually, they're closer to the ground to begin with, so you know, when they go diving around to defend against the ball, they got less distance to go down than we do, so they need less padding and stuff. I would say it's probably more a young person's game than it is a retiree's type of games. So I think it's perfectly. I think sometimes actually the kids are either requested or required to wear a helmet to guard their head, obviously, in case they hit. But otherwise than that, you know, we usually wear knee and elbow pads. Some people wear hip pads and stuff like that. So once you start getting that kind of equipment, it's pretty safe, and it's what kids do all the time anyway. So I think it's great to have blind kids throwing their bodies around like sighted people do in football and that kind of thing. And it gives them a sense of space and a sense of this sense of their bodies that they probably wouldn't have otherwise. So I highly recommend it for kids and young adults.
This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. Thinking this sounds like a great thing to do and a lot of fun, but it could be dangerous. But people, you know, they say that the balls make a sound, but I was wondering, do people actually throw it, or do they actually roll the thing?
It's rolled, not thrown. Yeah, so it still comes pretty hard at you, but you know where it's coming. You know it's coming along the ground rather than flying at you.
Now that sounds like that would be a safer way to go.
Is it true in Spain that goalball players actually gets paid to play?
Well, I think that's just a rumor. It could be true, but it's probably something you'd have to ask them, to be quite honest. They wouldn't reveal that to us.
The other thing I know that Spain has a very strong blind sports programs in all sports for some reason. As a matter of fact, it's it was the home for the International Blind Sports Association. What, you know, it may be that the country subsidizes more of the activities for blind sports than some other countries. I know certainly the United States. We do have the United States Association of Blind Athletes, which is trying to help promote programs at the grassroots level all across the country. And then their stars, when they get to the point where they're doing elite athletics, feed into the Paralympic systems, which is a companion to the United States Olympic Committee.
I have another question. Is the girls' team more competitive than the actual guy team, or they're about the same?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I suppose it varies from country to country, but it could be said that probably the girls' game is probably slower than the men's game. But again, that's a subjective opinion. I can tell you from personal experience that we played our girls in a practice game, and unfortunately, they beat us. But without any excuses. But so it just depends. I mean, but I suppose at a world championship level, the men's game would be a lot quicker.
There are some mixed games as well. I mean, there are sometimes where goalball teams have men and women on each side, are there not?
When you get to international competition, they are separate, men and women. I don't know of any international type competition, elite, you know, Paralympic competition or elite international competition where the teams are mixed. But certainly at the local level, you know, with our incidents of blindness around and the people, you know, the incidents of people who are blind who are interested and willing to play a sport like goalball, quite often it's useful to get anybody you can.
I agree with that. We do the same here. At a local level here, we often have mixed teams playing against each other. But like Doug said, at any international competition, there is a separate men's and women's competition.
And in Australia, how many games do you play a year?
Well, see, in Australia, geographically, it's very difficult to have a lot of leagues or anything like that, unfortunately, because the states are so far apart and it costs a lot of money to fly from one state to another. So really we only have one national competition a year, and that's our problem. We don't have as much competition as probably European teams and even probably you guys in the United States or teams in the other continents, but we only have one national championship a year, and so most of the competition down here comes from at a local level. And we don't usually have local leagues either. Like, for example, I'm from Queensland, and that's one of the states here in Australia, and we have a domestic competition which we probably only have three or four teams that play in it. So, unfortunately, goalball is not as popular as I would hope it would be, as it probably is, say, in the United States or in Europe, obviously.
Hello, my name is Angela, and I'm from Canada. What are the opportunities to play goalball nowadays?
My understanding is Canada has a very strong goalball program. I think Canada usually does well in international competition. Obviously, Canada is a big country, and it depends on where you are, I think. But it seems to me there was a big competition in Edmonton last year. But in any case, what I think you would do would be contact the National Blind Sports Organization in Canada and see if they have different teams in different sections of the country. In the United States, there seems to be a hotbed of activity around Kalamazoo, Michigan, around St. Augustine, Florida, around Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and in Colorado, and then I think there's one or two sites in California that have several teams, I think. And other than that, it's few and far between, so it requires some travel.
The primary issue in Canada might be, I guess, Angela, to try getting hold of the CNIB to see if they can give you any information, the Canadian National Institute for the Blind. If for some reason you can't get any information that way, send me an email, and I'll try to find out what the proper spot to contact in Canada might be. Okay, another question for the guys.
Yeah, one quickie. Hi, Joe here from Boston again. David, before you leave tonight, would you please give that address out? We can hear it and spell it out carefully like you did. Thanks.
Yeah, that address was www.sports.pressakey.net.
It's free, right? It doesn't cost anything to hear the stream, correct?
No, it doesn't cost anything to hear the stream, but you will probably have to install Real Player to hear the stream. I forgot to mention that. It's done by a guy, as I mentioned before, called Bill Teal. He's in charge of a project called Audio Network, which has a lot of other things as well, other interactive games, quizzes, etc., all done by audio using Real Audio Player, so you might want to check some of the stuff that he has going as well. And if you want to do that, just leave the sports out of the address, so you just go to www.pressakey.net.
How many teams are there actually in international, in one of the international, like overall, and how many days it lasts?
All right, well, as I mentioned before, at the upcoming World Championships, there's going to be 16 men's team, so that's 16 nations being represented in two pools of eight. And in the women's competition, there's going to be 13 teams represented in two pools. So you got 29 countries, 29 teams from, I suppose, 20 or more different countries going to be represented at the upcoming World Championships. The competition goes from, I think it's next Tuesday, whatever that date is, to the 1st of July. So I think it's the 27th of June to the 1st of July.
David, just because it might actually help Angela as well, is there a kind of a generic website for goalball, international goalball or something that might list contacts in each country?
Yes, I'd try it, www.worldgoalball.com. Just World Goalball, one word. There is an actual sponsor page that comes up where there's no links, but if you just, with your screen reader, press enter anywhere on the page, then it'll actually go into the page itself. I don't know why they've done it that way, but that's just how it works.
Thanks. So, Angela, that might be one of the places that you might consider trying. Let me ask Doug a question, if I might. Doug, first, thanks for staying up. I promise you wouldn't have to stay this long.
Tell us a little bit about your experience in terms of getting involved with goalball and where you play and a little bit about that, because you're sort of at the other end of the spectrum, I think. Someone who's generally playing goalball for fun, obviously to be competitive, but generally playing it at the local level, and perhaps you can give us a flavor of what that's like.
Okay, sure. I started, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. I went to Philadelphia. Every year there's the Blind Sports Organization, which is in Pennsylvania, puts on a weekend of activities called the Northeast Regional Games, and it's right around the beginning of June. And they try to give blind and visually impaired kids and teachers, PE teachers, adaptive PE teachers, a sense of all of the different blind sports that are available in one weekend. So you get a little bit, you get a flavor of a lot of different things. So that's when that was the first time that I had come across goalball. I actually come from a swimming background, and I tried to make the Paralympics in swimming. I'm 56 years old and tried when I was in 2000, so I was 50, and then tried again in 2004 when I was 54, and didn't make the U.S. team, although I did make the Paralympic minimum standard for the 100-meter breaststroke. And I actually came in eighth place in the World Championships up in Quebec City in 2003. I have been around blind sports for a while and have found goalball through going to these Northeast Games. And since then, I live in, as I said, Falls Church, Virginia, and which is right outside of Washington, D.C., and we've been trying for several years to get a team going here. Philadelphia has been very successful in fielding teams for a while now, but around the Washington, D.C. area, we're still at the fledgling stage, always looking for people who are interested in playing either recreationally or hopefully some people will catch the bug and go on and play more. Again, as I said earlier, goalball is more a young person's game. So although I enjoy throwing the ball around, I always tell people about when you get to be my age, you can do everything the young kids do. It just costs a lot more in terms of recovery. So I really enjoy playing the sport, and if I'd known about it 30 years ago, I would be totally gung-ho. And the problem, obviously, for people around the country is to find, as it is right around here, is to find enough other people and a facility to play in regularly to make a go of it.
We have a kind of a similar situation in Miami. We were able to persuade, and it's something that others may look at, our Miami-Dade County Parks and Recreation Department to provide substantial amounts of funding for a goalball team, which actually has competed in a number of places, certainly against the school and some other teams in St. Augustine and in the U.S. Championships. But it's very hard to maintain and get sponsorships, because really, if you're going to be any good, you've got to put in fairly heavy-duty practices. You've got to have a good coach who is not only up on goalball, but who is prepared to be pretty hard on folks. I went down and tried it a couple of times and decided that perhaps I was too old. But like you, Doug, had I been younger when I discovered goalball, I certainly would have been playing it more. Are you guys in essentially the same kind of situation in Australia, where you struggle to get enough people to play, David, or do you guys have any specific techniques that you've used to try to encourage goalball play that we might try in the U.S.?
No, we have the same type of problems that Doug was outlining in his situation, but probably on a larger scale, because unfortunately goalball and sport in general in Australia is declining a bit, probably because of other things that the young kids can do, such as computers and play music, etc. You know, I mean, we've tried everything, but I suppose the angle we're trying to come on to the parents, that is the fact that, you know, these days kids need to be active, and the best way to get active is play a bit of goalball. And But no, unfortunately, we're kind of in the same situation. I mean, like I said to you before, to the group before, here in Queensland, and Queensland's a state of Australia, we only have probably, I'd say, 20 players playing on a full-time basis. And throughout Australia, you'd probably say have only 60 or 70. Now, I believe in some of the other countries that, 70 players might be like just a local league, you know. So, yeah, it's something that we're trying to address, but just hopefully something will come along and the goal will get more popular again.
This is like towards Paul and David. Between goalball and other sports like karate, what would be the difference between goalball and karate? Meaning toward the actual physical and mental state of actually doing the sport.
I might be able to answer that because I also do Aikido, which is the Japanese form of martial arts. By the way, if you have an Aikido dojo, I really like Aikido because you're not learning a lot of hits and kicks that you may or may not be able to use in a situation. Aikido is more akin to judo in that if someone grabs you or comes at you, you can redirect the energy and take control of the situation without learning hits and kicks, but with learning how to deal with it in different ways. But in terms of discipline and activity and stuff like that, I think they're pretty comparable because goalball is a very intense game, you know, and you're really on for that pretty much that whole 10 minutes of that half, and that would be true of, you know, of in karate, especially if you were sparring with someone. We call it randori in Aikido. If you're doing freestyle and really have to be on your toes, that's comparable to what you come across when you're doing goalball. The big difference is that in karate or Aikido, it's one-on-one, whereas in goalball, it's three-on-three. So not only are you challenging yourself, but you're challenging yourself as a part of a team. And that's a whole different experience. And I think that's a very useful experience for blind people to have because there are so few situations where we can work in teams and learn the kind of team building that is essential in sports and in later life in work.
All right, goalball is a physical sport, obviously. What do you really need to work out? You know, the girls actually work. I don't know how they would work out their arms because a girl with like huge arms doesn't seem right. I mean, like, what exercises do you actually do?
Well, we do a range of exercises, really. A lot of cardio work, a lot of running. This is just in our team's case. We do a lot of running, a lot of weights, a lot of skills work. I mean, playing goalball is an exercise in itself. I mean, I play centre for Australia. That's my position. I play defence. And when you're diving versus 10 times a minute, or maybe even, you know, 12 times a minute, you know, you're diving down and getting back up. That's a lot of exercise. But, you know, we do a lot of cardio work, such as, like I said, running, bike work. We do a lot of sit-ups and push-ups, as I mentioned before, a lot of weights work in the gym, get on the rowing machine a fair bit. I mean, really, it's up to each person, really, to work out a training program for themselves. But the main thing about goalball is not to be... Oh, it's nice to be strong, but you've got to be fit. You really got to be fit. That's the major thing about goalball, to be as fit as you can be. As far as the women concerned, I don't know. I've never seen many women with very heavy arms in goalball. I think, you know, they're pretty nice, to be quite honest, but that's just my own personal opinion.
Hey, David, just one more quick question. Joe from Boston here, the hour's getting late. Who trains goalball up here in the United States? And I didn't know much about Aikido. That was someone else, Doug, but thanks anyway for the compliment. I like to learn those things to protect myself. But who trains people with goalball? I guess there's a way of doing it starting out gradually. You get stronger and stronger. Thanks.
Again, to the one for the United States, because, I mean, I don't know who trains goalball in the United States, but usually, I know in Australia, we get trained by a staff of coaches. We have a head coach, an assistant coach, and usually a physiotherapist/ advisor that does all the fitness work as well.
It varies an awful lot.
many schools for the blind in the United States actually do play goalball, and there is some pretty stiff competition among schools for the blind. In terms of adults, it really tends to be whoever manages to get involved. There are some clinics that are held in conjunction with other meetings for training goalball coaches. And one of the reasons why goalball is such an individualized sport is that there isn't really, I don't think, a manual for how coaching should happen or for how defense and attack should happen. There's a lot of variation in the way that different goalball teams approach both the training regimen and also competition. As David says, there really is an awful lot of difference in the way that different countries play goalball. There's really a lot of variation, and it's a really open question as to which of those ways is statistically the best, because there doesn't seem to be nearly as much to do with the particular way you play the game as there is to do with the skill and the strength and the listening skills of the people who are actually playing the game for their teams.
Towards the game, like when you're playing and get hurt, what does the coaches and the staff actually do towards your injury? Do they sub you out? Do they call timeout? I mean, if you get hurt in your balls or in your chest area, what do they do?
Well, obviously, if there's a medical issue, as David said before, you can get a medical timeout and can be substituted out and presumably could come back in later in the game as well if you are injured. There's a lot, there tends to be a good deal of incidental contact in goalball. So even though it doesn't seem like it, it's actually a fairly rough sport that's pretty hard on the body, because you're moving very fast and you're moving extremely strongly, and you're typically engaging a very large proportion of your body. And quite often, especially in a really close game, where you're getting right to the edge of your area and into an area of the next person, there is a tendency for some incidental contact.
Take it you play, Paul. You know a lot about this.
I have played. I wouldn't describe myself as a player. I would describe myself as a liability on any goalball team.
Can I speak a little bit more to the training? More generally, let me say, I'm also a triathlete. This is Doug speaking. I'm also a triathlete. What we go for in a lot of sports is not beefing up. I mean, for wrestling, maybe you'd want to beef up a little bit, and football, where you're throwing weight around and it's your weight against the other person's weight. But most training for swimming and for running and biking is not to, you're not lifting weights to, to add muscle mass. You're training to add strength to the muscles that you have. And if you do, for instance, bodybuilders will lift a huge weight very few times. Whereas most of us athletes are lifting less weight for maybe 10 times, 8, 10, 12 times in a set, and that will give you strength without adding a lot of muscle mass. The training, and I agree with David, that a lot of it is endurance training, actually. Running and biking and the things that will give you wind, because you're bouncing down and up constantly over the time that that play is in play. And so, number one, you want to be strong enough, leg strength and arm strength to push yourself off the floor and that kind of thing, but also you want to have the breath to be doing that continuously for long periods.
Well, that's why I asked that question, how training is done, because that's very important. You don't just start out by playing goalball. Okay, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, and it depends on if you're playing recreationally or if you're going for the Paralympics. If you're playing recreationally, then you don't have to put in 3 months of training to get ready to play, to play 5 minute halves with a bunch of people. By the way, that was another thing I wanted to bring up. In the absence of enough blind people, everybody's supposed to wear a blindfold. blindfold or, you know, ski goggles that have been taped over so you can't see through them. So there's nothing in the rules on a local level that says you can't have sighted people play with you. So, you know, you can show sighted people how, you know, how your abilities sometimes are better than theirs, and you know, it just depends on which ability you're trying to use. Although in international competition, for whatever reason, they have said that fully sighted people cannot play, even if they wear the blindfold at the local level. I don't see any problem with filling in teams and having fun with your sighted friends.
I think it's because they have relief players, people that doesn't have a team, but they go there to support, but they take them off the bench.
It's very unfair that sighted people can't play. I think they should be able to play as long as they play by the rules. You know, blind or everybody's blindfolded, we all have to go by the same rules. I think it's very unfair.
I know, in our national competition, we allowed sighted people to play in teams. I agree with exactly what's been said. You know, there's nothing wrong with sighted people playing at all. I mean, everyone's under blindfold, as you've already pointed out. So I just wish that was allowed at an international level. But then I suppose it all comes down to politics when you're talking about IBSA and, you know, it's a organisation for blind people, et cetera, et cetera. But I suppose that's for another discussion.
I could actually, I think, make a pretty strong argument for the other side, though I suppose it's a political argument because the teams that have larger numbers of blind people who are actually playing would probably be advantaged by not being able to play. But I think the other side of the coin is that international competition is supposed to be among people who are blind, and I guess I can see some justification in saying there is a substantial difference in terms of the abilities and the body language and a range of other things that would operate for a person who is legally blind and a person who is perhaps fully sighted. So I guess I can see it, but I'll give you a chance to rebut me, David.
I would like to jump in and just say that I'm kind of more on Paul's side of the fence on this one, but maybe for a different reason. This is Marlena, by the way. I think that it's great to have sighted people playing locally and maybe even nationally. But when you're doing something on an international level, you're really highlighting who you are and what you do. And to me, it seems that there are so few opportunities for blind people to be highlighted without sighted people sort of doing something somewhere in the background. And so I think internationally it should be as it is. If for nothing more than the absolute can-do message of independence it sends, and go ball.
Yes, I understand where Marlene's coming from, and I understand where Paul's coming from as well. But when you're from a country which struggles to get players and even struggles to probably put up an international team, then I think you're failing the sport as well by not allowing sighted people to play and actually keep the sport going. When you really think about it, once everyone's under blindfold, well, the advantage that they have is gone. I mean, you can't blame someone if they're physically stronger than you or if they just have more natural talent than you. You can't blame anyone for that. So the only advantage they had over you in other sports was the fact that they had sight, but now they haven't because everyone's under blindfold. You know, to exclude a country because they can't quite get enough players, then really you're, I suppose, defeating the purpose of having blind sports at all. Because, I mean, if we can't get, say, some sort of people playing for Australia, for example, this is only just an example, we've got enough players as it is at the moment, then the blind people who could have been playing in a national competition now don't get that opportunity anymore because of the rule that's in place at the moment.
I think I would say two things to you, David. The first thing is, I'm not sure I agree with the premise that there isn't a difference. Certainly congenitally blind people, probably because of their lack of involvement in physical sports, I don't think have the same kinesthetic notion of space that a sighted person has. I think there are some instances where their kinesthetic notion of space, as it's moderated through hearing and through listening to the environment and echo and so on, may actually be better than a sighted person's. And sometimes it may be worse. But the big difference to me is that it is different. And I think that a sighted person in that role is essentially not going to be competing with the same tools that a blind person is using, even if they are physically in the same situation.
I'd agree with you, Paul, entirely. If the sport was allowing only totally blind people to play goalball, but the reality is that you've got partially sighted people playing goalball, putting on a blindfold, and it's been my experience that some of these partially sighted people, to be quite honest, have a lot of sight. Yes, they're legally blind, but they have a lot of sight, and you could almost say they are sighted. But once they put on the blindfold, they're competing and they're allowed to compete internationally. We're talking about partially sighted people now. However, if goalball was only there for totally blind athletes, then I'd agree with you and say no, sighted people can't play at an international level. But when you're talking about a sport and an organisation allows partially sighted people to play a game as well, then that kind of, is a different story.
I'd also like to put in that I will grant you that the kids that I've worked with, I run a small organization where I try to get goalball together as well as Aikido and bowling and some other sports, for blind and visually impaired kids, because they're not getting the right kind of kinesthetic learning in either school, in PE classes or extracurricular sports activities at the school. I know some blind people whose kinesthetic abilities are unbelievable. And so it's not the fact that they are totally blind, it's the fact that they've had an environment that will not allow them to live other than a full, rowdy, roughneck kind of existence that would give them the opportunity to learn that kind of kinesthetic knowledge. And that's another reason why I think that having young kids play goalball is such a great thing.
I just hope you guys, win or lose, enjoy and play safely. And thank you so very much for the wonderfully positive image that you will both be portraying of people who are blind. I think it's great, and go get them.
I would absolutely concur with Marlena. I'd like to thank both David and Doug for turning up at very short notice and being a part of Tuesday Topics and turning this into a really intriguing show. I hope we've persuaded some people to try to get involved with goalball. It is a very cool sport. People can go to www.sports.presikey.net in order to find information there. And in order to get more information on goalball itself, go to www.worldgoalball.com. I'd like to thank our guests for participating in Tuesday Topics this evening, and I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. By the time you hear this, the championships will be over, so congratulations to the winner. On behalf of everyone who participated this evening on Tuesday Topics, this is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, saying stay tuned to ACB Radio. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will be looking at an organization called National Industries for the Blind. This organization, operating under the Javits-Wagner-O'Day Act, is involved in helping agencies all over the country develop innovative employment programs that enable people who are blind to find effective jobs, either on the assembly line or doing service work. What's this organization doing now? What are some of its new programs? How does it compare with vocational rehabilitation? To answer these and other questions, join us next week on Tuesday Topics, when the topic will be National Industries for the Blind. Join us on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.